You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
That's right, we are back. It's installment number 78 of the one and only Church of the Lampshade show. Every Tuesday, you know where to be right here, and it's great to have you here with us. Always excited to sit down to have our visit this week. I'm pumped for it. Hopefully you are too. It is a unique show. It's a unique place to congregate, and I think we're really building up something special here. Really like what we're doing, and all of you are a part of that. Of course, a big part of that is those who chip in financially, support the show. We like to kick off with that. It's the way we always open up the show. If you want to be a part of that, information's at the bottom of the page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you have other weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email. That's down there as well, and I'll do my best to get you an address for that. We do have 8 supporters this week, including our Bitcoin Anons, so always appreciate it. So let's get right to it. Good stuff in the listener supporter mailbag. We don't want to tarry. We like to get right in. Coming right up, thank you for what you do and provide from Ravana. And by the way, I will pass on the RA note envelope as well. I'll take care of that. Very much appreciated. And I'll tell you right now, Sven appreciates it as well. Keeping on rolling from Jackie, Grandpa Lampshade, a little dough for the show. Always enjoy your perspective on the scriptures. More often than not, you provide a fresh view that I'd never considered, and I find myself listening to each show 2 or 3 times as I gain something with each listening. I can't speak for any of your other listeners, but your work definitely helps me. All the best, Jackie. And yeah, that's what it is about. We just try to provide. The idea is to approach these things, particularly, well, all of the things we discuss here, but the scriptures as well, with a fresh perspective, a look that, you know, I've spent time in my life, it's been years, in you know, a regular, you know, the regular church, as it were. Of course, that was back before it had gotten as bad as it is now. But one of the things I notice is like so many things in the scriptures, they approach it the same way over and over. And it's like you could go from one church to another, and they preach the same set of scriptures and they teach the same exact lesson. And I think that has something to do with, you know, all these preachers go to basically the same seminary, the same preacher school, and this is how they're taught. I mean, it's how like university people go to college, and so often they're not taught how to think, they're taught what to think. So all they know how to do is to regurgitate what the professors have told them. And I think that's reflected a lot in what you see in the regular church now. They regurgitate what they were taught this scripture means. And it just becomes boring. You go in and they're going to cover this set of scriptures, and it's the same point of view over and over again. There's never anything new. And once you hit all of that stuff, it's like, well, why do I need to go back? You know, why do I need it? They're going to teach the exact same lessons over and over again. And I have the view that you can read, you know, a section of scripture, and every time you read it, get something fresh and new out of it, a new meaning out of it. It doesn't mean the old meaning goes out the door. It just means there's so much there, you know, to soak in, to get out of it. And that's exactly what we try to do here. We try to look at these things. I think we'll do that once again when we get to Christian's specific message later in the show. We're going to try, you know, look at something and you go, oh, you're going to talk about that. And the idea is you hear, okay, today we're going to talk about, like today, I'll just go ahead and spoil. We're going to talk about Samson today. We're going to do Old Testament. We're going to talk about Samson today. And most of you can say that and people will be like, oh, well, he's going to talk about blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the same old story that we've all heard 6 million times. But that's not what we're going to do. We always try to get a fresh look at it, a fresh look at it. What can this mean? And most importantly, what it means to you, what it means to me, what it means to us, how this has anything to do with our lives now. Because if it doesn't have anything to do with our lives now, then what use is? I mean, I guess it's interesting to consider as like a part of history or something, but really, if it doesn't have anything, if there's nothing we can take away from anything in the scripture that, you know, helps us to better understand the world around us, our relationship with God, our relationship with one another, with our fellow man, then then what's the point? I mean, it's just sitting around reading stories. I mean, if you read a story and said, oh, that's a good story, I mean, do you go back and read it over and over and over and over again? Well, no, because now you know how the story comes out. It was good the first time you read it. But what's the point in reading it over and over again? It just becomes redundant and boring. And that's not how the scriptures are meant to be. And you know, so again, we just try to go back and we try to look at things and get an idea of what does this mean for my life? How can I relate to this in a way to where, you know, I grow from it and I get something out of it and maybe understand the world around me better and other people and God and things such as that. So much appreciated. Mr. T, GPL, once again, wish to thank you, for what you do for us and the sacrifices you've made. God bless and keep you. And I do very much appreciate it. And it is my goal for this show to be a blessing for all of you. And that's, as I always say, you know, blessings. But I'm very blessed. I hope nobody thinks that I sit around here just in misery or something doing this show or living my life. I have been blessed beyond my belief. You know, there have been times in the recent history, you know, where it's like, you know, I have no idea how we're going to get through all of this. And yet, you know, God has blessed me immensely. And you people, you know, all of you listen to the show, those of you who financially support the show, you know, you are a part of that blessing. So if you think, well, I don't ever have anything to do with what God is doing, I can't figure out what these, you are part of it because you've been a blessing for me. Coming up from Andy, Grandpa, not sure if you caught this one, but about a month ago, the BBC streaming service purged an episode of Fawlty Towers where John Cleese of the Monty Python troupe mocks Hitler by putting his finger up to his upper lip and goose steps around like a Nazi. I'm so glad the BBC finally got my letter. How dare they let John Cleese mock our glorious Fuhrer? In all seriousness, and so I think I figured out why they did this. World War II mythology has ascended to the status of religion. Allowing John Cleese to mock Hitler by imitating him is just as inappropriate as a Catholic priest dressing up like the devil during Mass. Even if the intention is to mock the devil, it would be inappropriate because he's expected to behave in a reverent manner when talking about their religion. Fantastic show, as always, Grandpa, from Andy. And you're right in the sense that this stuff really is a religion for these people. I mean, it just absolutely is. I mean, they see a symbol, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like, I don't know, like the ovens are going to fire up or something. I mean, they can't even, you know, humor is out the window now, you know, humor is out the window. Nothing, everything, you know, it's the never ending offended. You know, it just, and everybody is growing so weary of it. And you know, here's a skit done, you know, basically making fun of Nazis. And that's not even allowed because the imagery itself is triggering to the eternally offended. And they just go around. I honestly can't imagine how miserable it must be to live your life in a manner to where you're just constantly going around looking for something to be offended about, just looking for something that you can screech and scream and proclaim and social signal that you're a victim because you had to see this thing or hear these words. And oh my gosh, you know, I can't imagine how miserable it must be to live your life that way. And if it was just these people being themselves, who would care? But the problem is that now it's being reflected in society as a whole. It's like they're being allowed. For some reason, all of a sudden, everybody is supposed to give a shit what the eternally offended feel. Why? Why? I mean, if you're offended about something, nobody cares. You know, but yet the eternally offended that that vent their public, you know, being offended publicly because I guess they're the only ones allowed on social media now. All of a sudden, everything has to change. I mean, you look around. The Washington Redskins don't even have a name now. They're the Washington Football Team. Well, why? You know, it's just like how you have all this Black Lives Matter thing, but it's all these white people doing it. You know, we did a show. We did the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist special. We did a poll. We didn't do a poll. A poll was done. A survey was done. And like something like basically it comes out to like 80% of people in the black community do not want the police abolished. Yet one of the big things being pushed by BLM is abolish the police. But the blacks don't want that. So who does? You know, the Indians weren't offended over the Washington Redskins. Nobody cared. But the eternally offended. So that means the rest of us have to care. Why? Why do they wield power? Who gives a shit that they're offended? Why is their being offended more important than anybody else being offended? But yet it is. But yet it's this is what is pushed. This we are told we have to care about it. Look at Mississippi. In the corner of their flag was always the Confederate flag up in the corner. That is their state flag. Now they don't have a state flag because they voted. They're Republicans too, by the way. Their state government voted to get rid of their flag because racism or something. We're going to burn our entire history because the eternal offended are offended by the flag. I don't understand it. Why? Nobody has told us why we have to care that the eternally offended are offended about something, because they're always offended. It never ends. The demands over their being offended just become more absurd. Once you eliminate the things that you could sit there and say, well, I guess I could see where somebody could be offended. And by the way, have you ever been to Mississippi? I've been to Mississippi. I've been through Mississippi. And let me tell you, there are a ton of black people in Mississippi. There are a huge amount of black people. And if maybe it's just me, but it's like black people in Mississippi are extra black. I mean, like literally like dark, dark. No, but really, I went through Mississippi. I've been through Mississippi a couple of times. And I mean, there's all these black people and they're like really, really, really dark black people. And they've lived there for generations and generations. And as far as I can tell, they didn't give a shit what was on the flag. But the eternally offended do. Nobody cares. Nobody cares that the blacks living there weren't particularly worried about the flag. A bunch of eternally offended care about it. So now you burn the state's entire history. Now they don't even have a state flag. What do they fly at the courthouse then? They just fly a white flag is what they ought to fly. They just surrendered. And appropriately, their state government's pretty much run by Republicans. That's just so appropriate. It's the surrender party. I read a good article the other day about, basically by a conservative about realizing how useless conservatism is. It's just absolutely useless. And it is. And I don't mean to make fun of people who are just regular people who says, well, I'm not a liberal, I'm a conservative. Because they don't really even understand that that term now basically means you just want the same thing as the commies, just maybe a little slower. You just want a seat at the table. You just want a piece of the pie. If I can get elected and I can get all the benefits too, I'll be the fake opposition. It's like the ultimate selling of your soul. We did our show on the, I guess it was last week, on the AWOL Republicans, but they're just filling their role as the fake opposition. No, the eternally offended, they never stop being offended. Their demands never end. They're eternally offended. They'll find something else to be offended about. They get offended at their own people, people that were supporting them, that were part of the in group last week. They're in the out group this week because they said something that somebody looked through a prism with one eye and decided that was something worthy of being offended about. Just talking about the World War II stuff just real quick, we just had the passing of the anniversary of nuking of Japan. And I'm always reminded about how they used the oldest Christian cathedral in Japan as the aiming point for their nuclear bomb. Maybe it's just me, but I think that's just tells a lot. Grandpa Lampshade, thank you for all you do. Blessings to you and your family from Patty. And again, I very much appreciated. And finally, we'll use this to just keep on rocking through the rest of our show. So I do appreciate it. Again, if y'all want to financially support the show, that information's at the bottom of this page. GPL, hope that you and yours are doing well. I was thinking of a good topic for your show would be on fear. I was not afraid when they started on the COVID scare, I admit. I'm scared about the government's plan to fix it. I know the COVID flu is being used to throw out the law. I thought I had a strong faith, but I feel the heat of tribulation. I have to admit that I am ashamed of myself. I know I'm not alone. Many people I know who do not have the understanding we do have told me they feel the same, hoping to come out on the other end of these things. I'm sorry, of these trials, victorious through Christ Jesus. I know you have been through some trials lately yourself. Please give us some advice from Tony. And thank you for the support, Tony. And that is, it is a good topic. We'll just go ahead and just keep on rocking with that. Look, it's understandable. It is very understandable because one of the things I think that makes these times, makes people fearful for life. I think possibly more than just fearful. I think a better word you might be looking for here, I think, is anxious. Anxious, because we use the term anxious, and we tend to think that means, you know, you're anticipating something. You know, like when you were a kid and you were anxious for Christmas to get here. You get anxious, ready for it to get here, anxious, looking forward to it. But anxious doesn't have to mean that. I mean, anxious can be you're worried about something, you're uncertain, you have this unsettled feeling. And it's absolutely normal to feel that way because we have no idea what the future can hold. I find myself sometimes still thinking in terms of like, you know, oh, I'd like to do this. And if I could get this together, I could do this. And then I could, you know, go do this. Yeah. And then I stop and think, but you know, this, we're in the middle of societal collapse. Why am I sitting here thinking like somehow things are going to be normal again in a year or two? I cut myself a little slack for that because it's just kind of a way to hold on to your sanity. Because we don't know how this plays out. That's what I always come back to for myself. We don't know how this plays out. You talked about things I have been through. You know, you think about it just a little over a year ago, for me personally, a little over a year ago, I had no idea how I was going to pay the bills next month. That's where I was. I had no idea how I was going to pay the bills next month. No idea what I was going to do. Wow, what now? No, really, literally, what now? And I'm going to tell you what, you don't know how things play out. I've not missed, the lights have never been turned off. Just like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm very blessed. God has blessed me in a lot of ways. And the point here is that you don't know how this plays out. We don't know how this is going to work out. We don't. We got a general idea where these people are trying to take it. I mean, sure, and that makes us anxious. We're living through societal collapse. There would be something wrong with you if you weren't fearful and anxious. This is a tumultuous time. Jesus himself, when he knew the time of his crucifixion was drawing near, you know, talked about his heart being troubled and you know, if there was some way God could take this cup from him so we wouldn't have to do this. But ultimately, he came back to, this is my whole purpose. You know, God's will be done. So it's absolutely normal to be anxious in these times. But what you got to do, I think, you got to stay sane. You know, unplug from this shit. I know there's a lot of people out there, hopefully not too many of you listeners, you know, that stay plugged into this all the time. And this is going to get into other things I want to talk about as well. With normies, I'm going to call them normie cons, and I don't mean that as like a derogatory term. It's just I lack a better term. You know, they're people that are starting to get onto this stuff now, but they're really late to the party. Most people listening to this show have been following this crap for years. None of this is a surprise. I mean, we sit here and we're anxious about it. We're sitting here scratching our heads like, what the hell's going on? You know, I mean, wow, they've really accelerated this. But we got a general idea of where they're headed with it. We got a general idea of what a lot of the plan entails. And we've been warning people about it for years. So we can't sit here and say we're totally shocked about it. We're shocked that it's accelerated at the rate it has. I'm shocked about it, but we're not, you know, just shocked that it's happening. But I know of normie people that sit around, you know, well, not necessarily sit around, but while they're at work or whatever, and they listen to normie talk radio all day long. They listen to normie talk radio, AM talk radio all day long, and then people are wound up. I was like, you need to unplug from that and start listening to the Church of Lampshade or Dr. Johnson's show. You need to really get plugged into some real talk, some real talk programs, some of these podcasts. I'm serious. I'm not just like sitting there, you know, boasting about what we do. Because the thing is, these people listen like this normie AM talk radio. And all these people do is talk about how bad it is and the Democrats and their evil plans. They look at the Democrats, they're the real racists and da, 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 da. But they don't provide any ideas. They don't provide any inspiration. They don't. It's just the Democrats bad. You know, all of this. They don't point out. They just, I guess I want to say they scratch on the surface, but they don't delve deep. They don't give they don't really offer anything to people except more anxiety, more things that you know, those demon rats are going to try to take our guns next or whatever the hell. And these people are stirred up. They're agitated. And they're stirred up and agitated because they listen to that crap all day long. You got to unplug from this shit. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, look, I more or less kind of like do this. I don't know. I guess you could say, you know, professionally, I do this kind of. you know, this is kind of a, this is a intrinsic part of my life, is keeping up with these things and staying informed about these things. And I'm going to tell you, I usually record this show on Saturday. This is like the culmination of the week. Saturday mornings, I sit down. You know, sometimes I have to move it around when I do it. But for the most part, Saturday mornings, I sit down. We have these discussions. It's like the culmination of my week. And then I unplug from this shit. They dropped a nuclear bomb somewhere on Sunday. I'm not going to know about it till Monday when I plug back in and start reading the news or whatever. You've got to unplug from it. You just cannot do this. And I know there's people out there that sit around and do nothing but sit online all day and just reading this stuff and covering over this stuff. And, oh, look what they're doing now. And they get wound up. Yes, it's important to know what's going on. Yes, it's good to understand. You're better off having the information than wandering around being stupid about it. That having been said, you always have to keep the perspective of what can you do about it. And, you know, honestly, in the big picture of things, there's very little you can do about it. There's some things you could do. Building relationships with other people. IRL relationships with people in your community. Come out of your shell. Try to talk to other people. You don't have to rant at them. Just hear them out. See what common ground you do have with them. Those IRL relationships are going to become more important. I really believe that as we move forward through these tumultuous times. Remember that this stuff is all temporary. This is by definition, because we're in this earth we're on this earth such a very short time. Everything here is temporary. This is all going to pass. I don't know what it looks like on the other end. I don't know. Their victory is not a guaranteed thing. I can't help but believe a part of this conditioning. Because you have to realize we've been conditioned to think they're always going to win. Why? Because we've had who for the opposition for decades now? The conservatives, the fake Republicans. Well, the fake opposition, the Republicans, the conservatives. That's who's been the appointed opposition for decades. And what have we seen? For decades and decades and decades, the commies march forward and always win. It's like watching the same show where, yeah, it's like watching old G.I. Joe. You know that Cobra is going to lose at the end, you know, at the end of the episode. Every single time, Cobra Commander's falling from his parachute going, I'll get you next time. You know, it's just like that. I mean, it's just like the commies win every time. Decades, decades, decades. We've seen this because the fake opposition is fake and they always surrender. They always give them what they want. They always roll over. They always cave. And so we get this mindset that they're always going to win. And they get that mindset. That's why anybody ever stands up, on the rare occasions anybody stands up and tells the commies to go screw themselves, no, we're not doing that. We don't care that you're offended. They shriek and they act like a spoiled child, throwing themselves down in the floor, kicking and screaming, I want the candy off the shelf. Because why? It's always worked. Nobody has the balls to tell these people, no, we don't care. We're not taking our statue down. We're not changing our state flag. We're not changing the name of our football team. Go screw yourselves. Nobody will do it. They always get their way. So, of course, they act like spoiled children and screech. Because they're supposed to always win. They're supposed to always win. They're G.I. Joe. You're Cobra. You're supposed to be parachuting down, screaming, I'll be back next time. That's the way the show is supposed to end. People in this society in general have lived on so much entertainment media their whole life, movies, TV shows. They literally live life like they're in a freaking TV show. They live their lives as though they're a TV show. They get on social media and it's like they're the celebrity of their own personal TV show. They are the center of their universe. They are the star. And sadly, it's reflected in our own people. People have this attitude like, it's inevitable. The commies are going to win. But it's not guaranteed. That's not guaranteed. I believe that they know the system. We've been warning for years now that the current order, the current system is destined for collapse. Ross Perot back in the 90s was basically warning that when he would talk on and on about the national debt. Now look here, Larry. Look here, you look at these numbers. They can't ever pay this money back. What was he saying? It's going to collapse. Look here, Larry, let me tell you, it's all going to fall apart. Am I showing my age? Maybe. But he was essentially warning against the current order. It's got to collapse, inevitably. We've been warning about it for years. Nobody listened because Nazis or white supremacists or whatever the hell we're supposed to be this week. Whatever caricature we are this week. And they know it's going to collide. The movers and shakers, they know this. And I really believe that a big angle of all of this is when the collapse comes, and we've talked about this previously on the show, when the collapse comes, they're trying to present a false choice between chaos or them, the oligarchy, having more power. You know, you sit there, we use the term commies because I don't like terms like liberals because these people are anything but liberal. Marxist works, but it's a different kind of Marxism. Because we're talking about communism. And look, if they got their way today and they see they had even more power now. They're setting up this new communist regime that they're aiming for. The corporations aren't going anywhere. I mean, like under some sort of like, I don't know, real Karl Marx communisms, you know, the corporations, Coca-Cola, Amazon, Facebook, all those would be dissolved and now they're owned by the state. That's not what's going to happen if they got their way. I mean, they because that's all a part of the oligarchy's playpen. The oligarchy isn't giving up any of their money. They're not giving up their toys. They want more power. These useful idiots on the street think that they're fighting against the corporatocracy while they're representing a movement, that has been funneled millions of dollars from corporations. But they think they're fighting the corporation. They're fighting the man. But I do believe they're trying to create a scenario to where the people can only choose utter chaos and, you know, utter chaos in society or giving them even more power. They create the problem, they solve the problem. Standard playbook stuff because it works. They don't need to invent a new playbook. The old playbook always works. Like watching football, if they can run the ball up the middle every time and win every game, they're never going to pass. Why do they need to pass? They can just hand it to the running back and crash up the middle and they win every game. They will need a new playbook. They'll sometimes alter the plays a little bit, but by and large, the old plays work pretty well for them. But the point is, look, to get back on topic, their victory is not guaranteed. It's not set in stone. There is a lot of rumbling in the rest of America. And remember, the message, the narrative is megaphoned by the media. Now, maybe in New York City, that's the way they feel. But, you know, the rest of the country matters, too. Not just New York City, not just Washington, D.C. And all those assholes live in a bubble. If you're a listener and you live in those places, I'm not, you know, no offense. I know, not you. But the rest of the country kind of matters, too. I need to stay on topic. I start jumping from one thing to the next. But don't be anxious. I mean, it's normal to be recognized as normal. It's a normal thing. There's nothing wrong with you to be fearful or anxious because we live in tumultuous times. There would be something wrong with you if you knew, you know, saw what was going on around you, understood the direction this was heading in, and were just like, everything's going to be fine. You know, just to be like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, so I mean, being fearful and anxious is normal. But that having been said, don't let it eat you up. I really wish we could get back to, you know, I wish we could get back to a society that appreciated manual labor. Yes, this has something to do with it, by the way. What the hell is he going on about now? No, I really do. I wish we could get back to being a society to where people actually building, creating, working with their hands was something respected in the society, because that's not where we're at today. This society does not respect the worker. And by the worker, I mean people that build things and go outside and do things with their hands. That's one of the things I do, to just, you know, try to keep everything together. I go outside. I'm getting kind of old for this shit, but I go outside and I do manual labor as a part of what I do in my day-to-day life. And it's been revealing. It's been very educational for me. And let me tell you why. Because, you know, let's say this versus, I go to the gym and work out. And there's nothing wrong going to the gym and work out. That's all fine and dandy. But the difference is when you go out and work with your hands and do something, at the end of that, I mean, yes, you're outside, you're getting sun on you, you're soaking that up, and you're exercising, you're moving your muscles around. But at the end of the day, you didn't pick up heavy things and set them back down. And at the end of the day, you're done. At the end of the day, you can look around and you fixed something. You created something. You built something. You did something. It is a feeling. There's a certain feeling of accomplishment there. If more people did this, if more people did these things, they wouldn't have time to run around and be offended all the time. The antidepressant pharmaceutical companies that sell all these antidepressants and shit would go out of business because people, you don't have time for that. You're occupied. Your mind is occupied. Your mind is being connected to your body, which is trying to accomplish a task. You're using both your muscles and your mind to figure out how to do what you're doing and what you need to do next and what this is going to look like when you're finished. And it's all connected. And your mental health gets better. Your mental health gets better. The pharmaceutical companies would hate it. The drug dealers would hate it. Because people wouldn't need their shit anymore. People wouldn't need to take their poison any longer. Because their minds are occupied with other things. And I guess that is what it really comes down to. Getting your mind on other things. Not say that you ignore these things that are going on. Again, look what we do with this show. This is, we talk about these things. But believe me, this isn't all I do with my life. I do have a real life that, you know, doesn't revolve around what's going on in the news, what's going on in politics, what's going on in the society around us. Yes, I very much look at these things almost every day. I unplug from it usually around the weekends. But it's not the entirety of my life, and it shouldn't be the entirety of yours either. You know, the whole, you know, any resistance to it isn't going to collapse because you take a couple days to not think about this shit. And believe me, if you do that, you'll come back fresher. And when you do look at this stuff, you'll understand it a little better than if you just stare at it day in, day out. And ultimately, kind of to your final point here, we launched around into this, our whole opening segment just kind of went with it. You know, as Christian believers, because we know this is all temporary, we're on the winning side at the end. We're on the winning side. You're going to get the pleasure as a Christian believer. You're going to get the pleasure no matter how this turns out. At the end, you're going to get to see a lot of these assholes thrown into hell. And if that isn't something to look forward to, I don't know what is. So trust me, you will not hear that message in a normal cup church anywhere in the country. I will bet you money on it. I don't care what denomination it is. You know, I was talking about normie cons, normie everyday conservative people. And have you noticed, if you talk to normie conservative people, there's some batshit crazy conspiracy theories going around with these people now. They're getting on, you know, you talk about wound up. You know, this is where you understand where things are going on. It actually kind of helps. You may not think of it, but it helps keep you sane, because normie people haven't been following this shit for years. Those of you, it can be so frustrating. We've been warning people about this for years and nobody listens. Now that it's happening, they're like, what's going on? It's like, hell, we've been talking about it for years. What do you mean what's going on? You're late for the party. But now these people are all shook. Because they're looking around, there's new mask mandates, they can't go hug somebody in the nursing home because that's against the law, only it wasn't a law, it wasn't passed by the state legislature. The governor just woke up one day and said you couldn't do it, and everybody says, well, that's it, you can't do it, it's the law, but it's not a law. Their society, everything is coming apart around these normie cons. These normie people have no idea. And again, I'm not saying normie and normie con is a derogatory term. I just lack a better term for these people. So we're using that. And they're looking around and they don't have any idea what's going on. And they are shook and they are wrapped up. They are a lot of these people ready to snap. In the NormieCon community, there are some batshit crazy ass. There's some crazy ass stuff going around. And they'll ask me about it because, you know, I guess I'm an edgy Nazi or something. And they're like, "Hell, what about this? Look, I saw this on Facebook." And I'm like, "What the hell is this?" "Well, it shows da 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 da." I don't know. They're running a child sacrifice kitten murder ring or something. And you're like, it's like they take all the worst conspiracies now and they're being conglomerated and you're sitting there and you can't even explain it to them. You know, you're like, okay, yes, look, you know, I think the Pizzagate thing is probably pretty real, you know, because, you know, we could get into the Podesta stuff and the Comic-Con pizza and all the satanic, you know, references there and the innuendo towards children and things like that. You know, but you try to pull that off and it's almost impossible to separate it from this other wad they've tangled it up with. It's as though, I mean, look, these people, these elitists, the oligarchy, whatever you want to call them, they're bad. They're bad enough. They're wicked enough. They're evil enough on their own. You don't need to make up some weirdo shit about them. I saw a deal somebody posted up the other day. And it was like, I don't know, about some celebrity. And they're like, when they were on Epstein Island, you know, they would make the children scream for their lives. And I'm thinking, you don't know that. Look, the guy's probably a real asshole. I have no doubt about that. But you don't know that. You're just making shit up. These people do enough bad shit on their own. They do enough evil stuff. There's so much wickedness. You don't need to make up some weirdo crap and throw it out there because that just muddies the water. It just muddies the water. There's enough real stuff. Yes, I get that it's frustrating because we have so little information to go on. So then people just start making shit up. Well, yeah, I bet they were just like stabbing the children 16 times. Well, you don't know that. And it's silly and it makes you look silly to go there. I've seen some crazy ass shit. Normie people are and they're eating this shit up. It's funny, isn't it? Facebook is banning anything, any truth about coronavirus. Any, you know, if a doctor puts up a video on Facebook that says, you know, look, I'm a doctor. I know about these things. And this is stupid. This is not this huge threat. The death number, the percentage, the death rate from this disease, from this virus is falling compared to the rise of number of cases, which are going on right now. And that video will be pulled. That video will be pulled tomorrow off of both Facebook and YouTube. And yet, like, normie people are passing around these retarded ass, just way the hell out there, batshit crazy conspiracy things, and no problem. Now, when they pull the coronavirus video, they'll say, this is a violation of our policy of misinformation. But people are passing around these batshit crazy conspiracy things, and apparently that's not misinformation. And what I find aggravating about it is, you know, it's not like, I don't know, look, there's a secret alien moon base on the moon or something that's relatively just, you know, it's out there, it stands on its own. You can believe that or you cannot. You know, what makes these things and what I think is some of the stuff that's being passed around is weaponized, which is just a hunch on my part, is, as I referenced earlier, these people will show me these things or I'll come across these things on my own online. And it's like, look at this. Somebody told me the other day that the children that are being used by the elitists, you know, are basically being ground up and put in the hamburger meat that you buy at the store. And the problem with these things is there's an element of truth that you would like to get out to the people. I do think that pedophilia is rampant in these circles, and I think there's enough element of truth of that. I mean, there's been people that have tried to blow the whistle. They get silenced. We know this is going on. we know in the sense that there's enough smoke there to think that there's fire. But you see, they take that and then they wad it up with stuff that's just batshit crazy. And then it just taints the whole thing. You see what I'm saying? They don't want you talking about, wow, I think the oligarchy are probably a bunch of satanic kitty diddlers. Because people like that, really, I think a camp isn't even the answer for people like that. So they don't want you talking about that. So they mix it in with, after they're done with the children, they ground it up and they ground them up and put them in your food. You can't even pull that apart because it's such a mess. You sit there and say, wait, no, but I saw it on Facebook. It's, it makes it, you see, this is how it serves their purpose. Because now you can't talk about the true thing because it's what's been ground up in the hamburger meat of information with this batshit crazy stuff. And you can't pick it back out. If you took hamburger meat and ground it up with pork together and then said, okay, well, where's the pork at? Well, it's in there, but it would be virtually impossible to go in there and pick all of the pork out because it's all been ground up together. So now you can't get the pork out of it. Same thing. You can't pick the truth out that they don't want out there because they ground it all up and mixed it all up with this batshit crazy stuff. And you see, that's how they try to get, and it's just like I say, normie people are, they're wound tight. People that have been like myself, like most of you that have been following this stuff for years, we're anxious. We ain't feeling it because we know kind of, we have a general outline with the plan. We don't have specifics, but we have a general idea where they're going with this, and it's not a fun place. We're anxious and everything, but that's nothing compared to people that, you know, last year at this time thought everything was great. But that next year would be better than this year, and 10 years from now, life would be good, and things would just keep rocking on. And then here in this short, what, last 7-8 months, it's been complete chaos, from coronavirus to riots in the street, and they're shook, because all of this, just like somebody ripped the scab off, they got no idea what's going on. There was no warning. Well, there was warning, they just chose not to listen to the warnings. But now they're all wound up tight. They don't know what's going on. They have no clue what's going on. They don't know what they're supposed to do. They have no idea what they're supposed to do. Anyway, it's trying times, folks. Nobody gets to choose the time that they live in. This is where we get dropped in. But it is temporary. And this is, we just keep moving forward. That there is no other way to live life because time moves forward. You will continue. It's like you can't jump off the conveyor belt. We're just on the conveyor belt moving forward. We have to figure out how to best live our lives, how to affect the things that we can affect around us, to try to change the things that we can change around us. And just again, to reiterate the point, there's nothing guaranteed that the commies win this thing. This little color revolution they're trying to pull right now. Yes, they wield a lot of power. Ignore the people on the streets. The power is being wielded by the corporations, by the oligarchy. This power is being leveraged. You've got the megaphone of the media. You've got all of these things going on. Yes, those are daunting things. There's no guarantee that they win this thing. You can see those tools start falling away as the societal collapse continues upon us. Why they're trying to push all of this now while they still have those tools. But as the society continues, the current order continues to fall apart at apparently an accelerated rate, those tools will start to be lost. It's like a depleting resource for them. I mean, look around. Are they acting as though time is on their side? I mean, we get all feeling like, man, we're up against the clock here. And yes, in some ways that is very true. But look at what your enemies are doing. Are they behaving in a manner like they're kicked back and time is on their side? They just have to run out the clock. They're running around, you know, almost frantic in the way that they're pushing this now. The accelerated rate. The accelerated rate tells us that time is not necessarily on their side because and I think a part of that is these tools that they have at their disposal are a depleting resource. The media is becoming less influential every day. It doesn't seem like it because they screech louder. Who the hell really watches CNN or MSNBC? And yet, that's the megaphone. But see, the fewer people that listen to it, it doesn't matter. So they just get a bigger megaphone and scream louder, trying to make more people that are moving further away from them hear them. It's a depleting resource. They use the power of the government, the power of enforcement against dissent. But as the order, the current order collapses, the ability to do that will start dwindling away. They'll start losing that ability to do that. That's why they're pushing so hard now. Again, we don't know how this plays out, but we have a general outline where they're trying to go with it. And we're doing our best to push back against it. But don't sit here. We cannot sit here and just cede the victory. Like, well, they always win, so what's the point? It's not the way to do it. But remember, again, all of this is temporary. This is all temporary. It all ends. The game ends for everybody at some point. We got to wrap up on that note. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. As always, it looks like we're going to run long. Imagine that. And so, we're going to wrap up the regular part of what I call the regular part of the show. Get into the sermon this week. So get in here and fill those pews. You know what to do. That's right. It's time for the Christian specific message here, the Church of the Lampshade. If you don't want to hang out for that, that's up to you. You're welcome. Whether you want to or not. But anyway, let's get in here. Let's get this going. So yeah, as we get settled in here, not going to lie, I had to stop everything, go to the bathroom, get some fresh coffee. Like a big mental breath of fresh air. Sure, breathe here. Got to get my second wind. Get my second wind. Do the Christian-specific segment, this week's sermon. I spoiled earlier. I said we were going to talk about the story of Samson this week. I made this decision like, I don't know, this morning. Or maybe, I think it was yesterday evening. It's kind of like a last minute. I was going to talk about something completely different. I was kind of bothered by that idea because it's kind of like, we kind of talked about that before. And then it's like, hey, let's talk about Samson. I think it'd be good stuff. This is one of those cases like we were alluding to earlier. Like if you went to Normie Church and you were like, this week we're preaching about Samson, be like, well, I know this story. Know this story. Don't need to hear it again. And thus, because everybody knows the story, we're going to kind of skip around on the scripture reading, be honest with you. Because I don't have the time to read the whole thing. It's too long and it would be too boring to do in the show. We're just hitting the high points because, again, most everybody knows the story for the most part. So we're just kind of hitting, going to hit the high points here and get the point. Now, before we get into the story of Samson, I'm going to ask you a question. We'll get to the answer as we roll along here. But if I ask you a question, because again, everybody's heard the story, but it's familiar with the story. Even if you're not a Christian believer, you know the story of Samson, or you got the general idea. So I pose the question to you, where did Samson's strength come from? That's the question. And everybody listening is sitting here going, well, I know the answer to that. Everybody knows the answer. A bunch of second grade Sunday school kids know the answer to that question. Or do you? So let's go to Judges. We'll start in the book of Judges. It's always fun to rock Old Testament. So many people shy away, but I just rocking it because we can learn from this too. We're going to start at Judges. Let's do chapter 13. We're just going to do verses 1 through 5. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines 40 years. And there was a certain man, I never pronounced these right, but anyway. And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manah, and his wife was barren, and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman, and said unto her, behold, now thou art barren, and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive and bear a son. Now, therefore, beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. We'll stop there for this first, just because, again, this is interesting stuff. interesting stuff for me. One of the first things that strikes me is how doesn't this story also kind of remind you of something else? It reminds you of Abraham's story, doesn't it? I mean, Sarah was barren and old, and yet God says she's going to bear you a son. God never does things the easy way, does he? I mean, he could do, look at when Jesus came. I mean, you would have thought, if man was doing it, well, there would be a guy who shows up, and he's been through the seminary and he's most well educated in the scriptures. But the guy shows up as a carpenter's son. The same thing. Yeah. Why God has to do these things. God does these things. He likes to do these things through common people. And he likes to do these things in a way to where nobody can try to be tempted to take the glory for themselves. He just wasn't born in a natural way. This woman's been barren her whole life, just as Sarah was barren her whole life. And she was old. Sarah got old before she finally had a son. And so it's through this barren woman. Also a Nazarite. He shall be a Nazarite. Now, a Nazarite is somebody who's taken a special vow before God. And it rhymes with Nazarene, which is actually a little bit different meaning. When we think of Jesus was a Nazarene, but that's a little different deal. In the early church, they were called Nazarenes. That's a little bit different deal. But he was a Nazarite. Samson was a Nazarite, which is somebody who's basically taken a special vow before God. But he says he's going to be a Nazarite, but he hadn't even been born yet. So how can he take this special vow before God? This is all being laid out before it's even happened. Now, again, we're not going through this whole story. Most of you know the story, and we don't have the time to sit here and read the whole story. If you haven't and you want to refresh yourself, you start right where we started there, Judges 13, and you can read through the whole thing. As for us, for this show, for time constraints and to not put you to sleep, we're going to skip forward to Judges. We're going to skip forward to chapter 16. We'll start at verse 16. And we all know now with this woman, this Delilah woman, he's fallen in with. Always with a woman, isn't it? Bringing him to his ruin. Wasn't thinking with the proper... Well, anyway. Now, up to this point, she shit-tested him time and again. Samson, where does your strength come from? And he'll say, oh, well, if you tie me with ropes that have never been used, man, I won't be able to do anything. And she ties him up with ropes. It's not like he doesn't know what she's doing. She ties him up with ropes, says, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He jumps up, busts the ropes like they're not even there, and he's outside looking to whip some ass. And then what she says, it's not her fault. She's like, oh, you lied to me. How could you lie to me? She does this multiple times. And he's just so taken with this woman. He just keeps falling for it. He keeps falling for it until we pick up here at verse 16, chapter 16. It came to pass when she had pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death. In other words, she nagged him to death about it. You don't really love me, Samson. How can you say you love me when you won't tell me where your strength has come from? Never mind. Every single time he gave her a fake answer, she proved it was a trap. Amazing. Anyway, so she vexes his soul unto death. She nags him to death about this, that he told her all his heart and said unto her, there hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. And if I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she went and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up this once, for he hath shewed me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in her hand. Imagine that. And she made him sleep upon her knees, and she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head, and she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he woke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza. and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. And then finally, we're going to do one last scripture here. I promise this is it. Don't go to sleep on me. And we're going to seem totally random, and you're going to think this has nothing to do with Samson. We're going to skip forward to the book of Luke. That's right. We're jumping forward to New Testament. Chapter 17, we're going to start at verse 11. And it came to pass as he went to Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him 10 men that were lepers, which stood afar off. And they lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said unto them, go shew yourselves unto the priests. And it came to pass that as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back and with a loud voice glorified God and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answering said, were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? There are not found that returned to give glory to God, save this stranger. And he said unto him, arise, go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole. Now, that's all the scripture reading, by the way. I come back to the first question. Where did Samson's strength come from? And for most people, you would answer, because you've heard this story so many times, you'd say, well, from his hair. He had his hair. He was never supposed to shave his hair off. And that's where his strength comes from. That's just silly. Let's be honest. That's just silly. How does your strength come from your hair? I mean, come on. Come on now. We're real people here. How does his strength come from hair? The hair is a representation of his conduct. Remember, he was a Nazarite, which means somebody who has taken a special vow before God. And yet he was a Nazarite from the womb. How do you make a vow when you're from the womb? You see, from the beginning, he was set up to play this role. The hair simply represented his vow, his contract with God. You would have this strength to do all these things. And it's an interesting story if you're not familiar with it by some reason. I mean, he did all these grand exploits. I mean, it was just like if you ever fantasized about like basically practically being invincible, you know, and just by like you kick anybody's ass who messes with you, you know. That's how this guy was. This just superhuman strength. You pick up a jawbone from a dead ass and slay all of these people, kill all of them with it. Like all these men come against one guy kicking their ass. And all this superhuman strength. And yet we see this or play along and play out. So what changes? Was his strength suddenly magically taken from him because his hair got shaved off? Well, no, because the strength didn't come from the hair. Time and again in the New Testament, we see that when Jesus would heal somebody, often he would say, in the scripture here, as your faith, you were healed as like your faith, you know, and basically in equality with your faith, so you're healed. Along the way, Samson started forgetting that the strength came from God. He probably started thinking it came from his hair. I was told as long as I never cut my hair, I'd have this strength. And he started thinking it came from his hair. And he started feeling as though it was his own. He started trusting in his own strength. God had given him the strength. It was God's strength. But you see, he won every encounter. I mean, you pick up and slay 1,000 men or something. I mean, you sit there and kill all these people. Anybody who comes against you, imagine you live your whole life. You're such a badass. Anybody messes with you, you kick their ass. I mean, you like never, ever lose. You start thinking pretty highly of yourself, wouldn't you? Be like, man, nobody messes with me. I'm the baddest dude in this town. See, Samson started thinking his strength came from himself, from his hair. But the hair was just a representation. Silly. You don't get strength from hair. We all know that's ludicrous. We don't have to pretend like we live in some sort of fantasy. The hair was simply a representation, his contract with God, his strength. This represents that God has agreed to provide you the strength to do these things. But see, he started thinking it came from himself. And then, ignoring all of these red flags, he tells this woman, He tells this woman where his strength comes from. You see, he's turning back on the contract, turning back on the agreement. He really believes in his heart that the strength does come from his hair. He is completely, by the time that bitch is sitting there shaving his head off, and what a sound sleeper he must have been. By the time this bitch is shaving his head off, he's already completely forgotten this comes from God. He thinks it's all from him. And the contract, his original agreement where the strength came from. You see, his faith that this was coming from God, it was gone. Now he's just trusting him in himself. But you see, God holds up his end of the bargain. But as soon as he went so far with it, that as he did, where he tells Delilah about the hair thing, then she cuts all the hair off, the contract's null and void, and it's not on God's part. That falls on him. And lo and behold, it didn't turn out well. Nobody could be surprised. I bet he was acting shocked, but how could he be shocked? She pulled the same routine on you multiple times before when you gave her a false line because a woman was nagging at you, and because, I don't know, I guess the sex was good. To be honest, we're grown people here. He winds up telling her this, and now he gets his eyes gouged out, tortured in prison because he forgot. He forgot the real source of his strength. As time had gone by, his faith, just as our New Testament scripture, the faith the man showed in God, and he was healed, and he gave glory to God. You see, Samson did the opposite. His faith started dwindling. I'm sure early on, like his first couple encounters, he's looking at a bunch of guys coming at him, and he's like, man, I'm going to get my ass kicked. But he does that. He just overwhelms him, just not even close. Wow. And then the next encounter, and the next encounter. And time again, victory after victory after victory after victory. Instead of his faith increasing, his faith actually started decreasing. And it doesn't make sense at first when you think of it that way. You would think, well, each time he'd be like, wow, you know, even more faith, more. But you can't confuse faith with confidence. I'm sure he got really, obviously, by the time this story ended, he jumps up, his ball, doesn't even notice. And he thinks he's going to shake off there and go out there and do what he's always done, kick these guys' asses. You see, yeah, he had no lack of confidence. You can't confuse confidence with faith. Samson was plenty confident. He is so confident, he went ahead and told her about the hair thing. But you see, with all these victories, his confidence was growing, but his faith was in an equal measure going down because it was becoming misplaced. He was placing his faith in his own strength, in his own ability. He forgot it came from God. It wasn't his strength. He wasn't special. He wasn't like Mr. Super Buff guy. The strength was God's. God has such a sense of humor. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because whenever you see like pictures of Samson, you know, like artist rendition, he's like this huge muscular guy. But knowing how God has like this funny sense of humor, I wouldn't be surprised if Samson was like 120 pounds soaking wet, you know, just because God is like that. He has a sense of humor. You know, this is like just all the more glory to him. You know, they were probably like, we're going to kick this little friend's ass. And he just, every time, wipe him out. But as victory after victory, yeah, he was confident. But his faith was going down because each time he started forgetting where the strength came from. He started thinking it was his own. Every time I go out, I kick these guys' asses without question. Hell, half the time I won't even have to try. It ain't even a challenge. All of this starts. Remember, at the beginning of the scripture, we read, Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So he hands them over to the Philistine. Well, how does that happen? Did they just slowly lose their faith in God? While they're prospering, they get confident, and they forget where the prosperity came from. God goes down on the scale of importance. They start thinking it comes from their own strength. It's just human nature. Think of all the people that go on about brag about God bless America, but then they're like, yeah, America kicks ass. You know, there's never anything about, well God, you know, where do you give the glory to God? America's faith is in its own strength. I'm not going to get way off topic here. I'm going to force myself to stay on topic here. So his faith went down and started being misplaced into himself. he started putting his faith in himself. And what did it get him? He forgot that it came from God. I think about in the New Testament, I believe it was Paul writing and talking about how for some people, what you eat, you know, what foods are clean and unclean was still a big issue at that time. And Paul made the point that, you know, for somebody that, you know, he's like, me personally, I think it doesn't matter. But he says for somebody that is a sin in their mind, it is a sin because they're not acting in faith. If you think that, you know, eating this particular kind of bird or pork or whatever is an unclean thing and a sin for you to do, then you're not acting in faith. So if you do it, it is a sin because you're not acting in faith. Now, for me, it's not because I don't think God really cares what I'm having for supper. You see, it's because if you're acting in faith, you know, in other words, if you believe that that is unclean for you to eat and is a sin for you to do, but you do it anyway, you're not acting in faith. You're acting counter to that. In other words, where have you placed your faith? Samson started out strong, you know, because he started off probably not confident. He's probably like, man, can I really do this? Is this really going to work out? But his confidence grew, but his faith became misplaced. Thought it was from his hair. He thought it was from his hair. I'm so strong because I have all this hair. No, it's because God is doing it. You're just the vessel. You're just the intermediary that God is doing this. That's all you are. That's all of a sudden not very flattering, is it? You know, it's much more flattering to be like, yeah, I'm a badass. You heard about that guy that kicked all them people's ass? That's me. That's me. But wait, to view it as just an intermediary, I don't know. God did that. He used me for that. But apart from that, I'm just basically along for the ride. It's like I've pointed out before about the prophets. You know, they were just messengers. God would appear and say, look, here's the script you're supposed to read. At the end of that script, I'm going to bring some fire down. And people would say, wow, the prophet called fire down from heaven. No, he read the script. And God said, at the end of the script, when you're done reading this script, I'm bringing fire down. It's all God. His words, his fire. The prophet's just like the messenger. He's just standing there reading the script. He's like the ringleader at the circus, not the trapeze artist. We talked about this on previous shows. It's all from God. Now, what this matters, I think, for us, because to remember where our strength and our blessings come from. Yes, we have to do what we can. I mean, Samson had to go out there and face these people he fought with. I mean, you have to do what you're supposed to do. The prophets were told, look, you got to go tell the people these things. And the prophets would be like, you know, they're not going to believe me. And God's like, that's okay. Because if you refuse to go tell them, then part of the guilt's going to fall on you. As long as you tell them, it doesn't matter. After that, don't worry about it. If they don't listen to what you say, none of that's on you. I'm not going to hold it against you. But we're not going to let him go out without being warned. You see, Samson, the prophets, this is what God told them to go do. And God was doing the thing. It wasn't Samson kicking their ass. God was kicking their ass. He was just the intermediary. It's not the prophets that called fire down from heaven. God did that. They were just doing the announcing for the show, basically. Learning our role in what God is doing. Learning what we're supposed to do and realizing it's not really necessarily even about like us being all of that. It's just figuring out what God is doing and figuring out how we can, you know, how we play a role in that. And then you start seeing success. Not because it's you doing it per se. I mean, you took a part in it, but it was God doing it. But you figured out what God was doing. You got in there and you got to be a part of that. But the strength, just as with Samson, the strength doesn't come from your own uniqueness or whatever. It ultimately comes from God himself. We all just ultimately wind up being happy to play whatever role that we can play in that. And it's our role to play. You can't just sit off the stage and not do anything. You have a role to play. You have to do that. But ultimately, the glory does belong to God, The strength comes from God. The faith comes from God. And the more we place our faith in Him, the more victorious, as it were, that we will be. Because, again, in equal portion, it just goes up and down. It's equal portion where your faith is. These guys, it says that Jesus would go into a town and the people didn't really believe anything. They didn't have any faith in what he said. And it would say that he couldn't heal very many people there because they didn't have any faith. Works in equal portions. So as your faith goes up, your faith in the Lord, and always remember, as you have success, bear in mind where it comes from. Because success and failure in this life, they're all fleeting. It's all temporary. It's all temporary. The important thing here is to remember that as you have success in life, you know, what role does God play in that? Not to get overly caught up in yourself. As you move forward in life, don't be anxious. You don't have to be fearful. It's normal to feel those things. But remember, your strength is in God, and victory is indeed yours through Jesus Christ. It is His victory. Nobody can take that from Him. We just all do our part. We all just do our best to be a part of that. We got to wrap up on that note, long as usual this week. Hopefully you got something out of that. Hopefully we illustrated that in a way this week that, you know, gives you a little different view of it. Besides simply just reading the story and being like, oh, well, you know, cool story, I guess. Doesn't have anything to do with me, but it does. There's something to learn from it. And hopefully, perhaps, we've been able to look at it from a different point of view, a different perspective, a little insight maybe you hadn't had before. You were just thinking it came from his hair, you know, or something like everybody else would. But, yeah, that's what we strive to do here in this show. We're going to wrap it up on that note, folks. Hour or so. It's always or so. An hour flies by before you know it. So, you'll be going to wrap up on that note. Don't forget, we here every Friday. Sven Longshanks and I do a quick 30-minute Daily Nationalist every Friday. Clown World in Review. Good times. And, of course, we'll be back here next Tuesday, as always, for the Church of the Lampshade.